If you've missed a show, the full audio library is at RadioMD.com. And now back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're listening to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Gary, why are you about to burn some incense?
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me on again tonight. But, you know, people may burn incense for mood or part of a meditation practice to de-stress, perhaps. And so you might think that all of that might be good for your cardiovascular system because, hey, you're getting more relaxed, you're dilating the blood vessels, maybe getting a little more blood to the brain. But in fact, a study done in Singapore as part of the Singapore Chinese National Health Study looked at 63,000 people over the long course of time, years of looking at these people, and they found that a lot of them, I guess it's very common over there in Singapore to use incense, a lot of people were using incense, and those using the most incense, and we're talking about burning incense like 12 to 20 hours a day, had statistically significantly greater risk of cardiovascular disease. Probably related.
How do they burn it for 16 or 20 hours? Don't they sleep, or do they leave it burning while they're sleeping?
Yeah, I think it's just burning, and somebody is around to light another one. It's just a cultural practice. Who's ever up and around, you might light it in the morning to get a fresh morning scent going. Don't forget, there's all different scents for different times of the day, different moods you're trying to create. So, you know, we in this country became most familiar, mainstream with incense probably during the 1960s as part of the counterculture, and hasn't really, I don't think, has really caught on in a big way. But in cultures that it is, I mean, it could be a significant cardiovascular risk, probably because of the particulate and the some of the volatile chemicals that come off of it, that doesn't rival cigarette smoking because you're not directly inhaling it, but compared to the side stream smoke from cigarettes, it's really not that different. So, you know, so, I think that if you want to burn some incense occasionally, you know, on a special occasion or, you know, once a month, I don't think that's going to be a real risk factor. But this data suggests that, you know, an everyday user may want to think twice about that.
So, Gary, that's the real point. So once in a while, like it was used back in the old days, like I did in medical school, you'd use it for a couple hours to clear out the smell or change the smells in your office. No big deal. But constant use may be a big deal.
Yeah, and in general, if you've got people around with asthma, babies, you wouldn't want to be burning incense around babies, just as a general precaution because their respiratory system is very sensitive.
Now, the big one that I think in this story is plasticizers in utero affect male development. I know this is a technical study, but tell us about it.
Okay. Well, this follows up on previous results, similar, but the earlier data were from the University of Rochester studying people in upstate New York 5 to 10 years ago. This new study is in Sweden looking at 196 boys aged about 20 months, you know, not quite 2 years of age, and they took measurements of a characteristic maleness feature, which is called anogenital distance. So there's a, you know, for between your genitals and the anus, there's that perianal area there. There's a certain distance or dimension it's supposed to be. If you're feminized in utero or in early life, that distance will be shorter. We believe that distance is pretty predictive of things like what semen counts at adolescence. So in this particular, and we know that phthalates in utero exposure can tend to feminize boys. It inhibits the fetal testes from sending out a signal, a testosterone signal, at a certain point of gestation. And sure enough, in this study, and the reason why I think this study is relatively important, even though the effect wasn't that big, but it did show the effect, so it's consistent with previous results, and the particular phthalate that was associated with this anti-male, endocrine disruptive effect was diisononal phosphate, or DINP. And why is that such a punchline? Because that's what they're using these days to replace DEHP. We all knew DEHP was too toxic and should be removed. It was highly endocrine disruptive, even carcinogenic. It was what was in, Mike, was in hospital tubing, and the preemies were getting too much of that. And so now DEHP has been replaced by DINP, and that was the bad actor in this study. That was the one that showed the biggest correlation. So maybe, this is unfortunate substitution, the classic case of unfortunate substitution, replacing one thing with something that we don't know quite as much about, and then when you do the testing on that, you see that it sure enough has also has adverse effects. So a very interesting study from Sweden. It definitely needs to be repeated, but we are developing a track record here of phthalates, plasticizers, being anti-male if exposures in utero. And where is it coming from? Probably cosmetics, in terms of what these moms, they're probably the primary source of exposure was probably the thing to cosmetics. If that's where now, phthalates are used, that goes along with fragrance. So if you want to avoid phthalates during pregnancy, look for products that you're going to be wearing on your body, like deodorant, body lotions, perfumes. Look for them that are phthalate-free. Look for them that have essential oils rather than fragrance as the scent.
Now, how much do we get from our environment, that is, fragrances and other things, versus how much do we get from plasticizers in bottles like we drink water out of?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. Certainly we get some from there. But we see the greatest correlations between phthalate levels in urine and personal care products. So exactly what I'm talking about, the deodorants and skin lotion, anything that has fragrance in it. And so, sure, there is some, and if you were trying to be a purist about it, you would not microwave in plastic, you would not wear anything with fragrance in it, and you would not drink out of a plastic water bottle, because especially those, they could be sitting around for long times in warehouses under high temperatures, and it's the high temperature that will leach the plasticizers out of the bottle and into your glass of water. But I would say the number one, because you're wearing it all day on your body, is the personal care products like fragrance, perfume, that kind of thing. And this study, it did not identify the source of the DINP, but it is, in my estimation, it would be likely to be personal care products in these pregnant women.
Gary, I'm going to try and ask you to stay on for a couple because you've got some other great stories, but here's a couple questions we've already received on the email line from you and from this topic. And the interesting thing, anyone can write us at udocs@gmail.com and send a question in, but the interesting thing is there are two questions that say, that are basically the same, which is, can we get our phthalate level measured, or these levels of these chemicals measured? How easy, how tough is it? And the third question actually is essential oils. They don't contain any phthalates, do they?
No, that's right. Neither does fragrance, but they use phthalates as carrier for the fragrance so that it clings and sticks to the skin. Essential oils don't need the phthalate carrier.
Okay, now the other thing is, can you get the levels measured?
Yes, you could do that. That would be highly unusual. To interpret your levels, you would have to look at the NHANES database, which has the normative levels for adults of all the different phthalates. So it's not that simple to know whether you're at a level of concern or not. There's background levels.
Well, Gary, we've got a hard break, Gary, so we'll have to come back. Hopefully you'll stay with us right after the break. We'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.